You're listening to Vatican Radio.
This is Vatican Radio. I'm Chris Altieri. The National Aeronautics and Space Administration of the United States, NASA, made an announcement this week about a major astronomical discovery. Seven planets orbiting a star, three of which are in the so-called habitable zone of the solar system, some 40 light-years from Earth. Scientists have named the system TRAPPIST-1, an acronym for the Transiting Planets and Planetesimals Small Telescope, which is located in Chile and was the instrument chiefly used in the original discovery of the system. No other known system contains so many Earth-sized and probably rocky planets. Scientists say they need to study the planet's atmospheres before determining whether they are capable of supporting life. To learn more about the discovery, we spoke with Jesuit Father Brian Reedy, a biophysicist who has designed experiments on life forms conducted aboard the International Space Station.
An exoplanet is any planet that exists outside of our solar system, so our sun and our star and the planets that revolve around it defines a system, and anything outside of that system is exogenous or exo to our system. So exoplanets are planets that exist around other stars.
And they found, again, they found seven of them, three of them that seem to be in more or less what the scientists call the Goldilocks zone, the habitable zone. So why is that significant?
Well, this discovery is significant for lots of reasons. It's a major discovery. And I would say that there are three main reasons why it's really exciting. First is just the raw science of it. It would be a lot less interesting if what actually happened is that we've gotten so good at our telescopes that we looked up and saw a star and we said, zoom in on that star. And then we saw, look, there are planets around it. You saw these little marbles going around a star. That would be a great story, and people think that's what happened. If you look at the pictures, they see these little colorful pictures, you know, and the better news sources mention that it's an artist rendering. The less honest news sources leave out the fact that it's an artist rendering, because we haven't actually seen these things. It's much more exciting than that. It's much more profound and much more amazing than that, because we reconstruct the system based on variations in the intensity of a star. So the reality is we have these incredibly stable, solid telescopes that look up. We point ourselves at a star that is nearby, and we watch its intensity, how brightly it's shining. And variations in that intensity allow us to model what is happening in that system. So we haven't seen any of these things, but tiny variations in the intensity of the star gives us information about what's happening around the star, and then we construct, you know, using the brilliance of our intellect, a model of what's happening around the star, which is much more fascinating just on a scientific level, that we're able to do that. And we have the technology to do it and the ability of reconstructing what's happening 40 light years away around a star based entirely on deducing a system from the data.
So essentially, what would it take to block out X amount of radiation from this particular star? And we say, okay, it would have to be something about this size and this density, traveling at this speed in an orbital path, what will turn out to be an orbital path of about this, which would give you the distance from the star, right? But this is all pretty basic math at the end of the day. This is grunt work, is it?
It is basic math, yes, in a way. But the power of the modeling still is remarkable. Like, for instance, what you're essentially doing is we're looking for planets. That's what we're doing. We're looking for planets. So we pick stars that are interesting, and we fix on them, and we watch the intensity of the light. So it's like looking at a flashlight far away. And then we look for variability in the light, which means that, one, is we have to have a telescope that's able to filter out all other variation. So you have to be looking at just real-time light, filtering out and excluding all, I mean, accounting for all variation due to atmosphere or distance or things that are happening in between. And then with that information, watching to see what's happening. When a planet transits, which means it passes between the star and us, there's a dip in the intensity of the light. That dip will be according to the size of the planet. So the change in intensity indicates the size of the planet. And then how long the dip occurs gives us the orbital period. So, but with those things, that you can just crunch, do some math, and you arrive at the size and orbital structure of the planet. But it's all deduced. That's the thing that's interesting, is it's all calculated. It's not we haven't seen any of these things, but yet we're capable of with good certitude, reconstructing what this system looks like entirely from these signals that we get from the intensity of the light.
But they also have then an idea more or less of the composition of these planets. Some of the more sensational write-ups I've seen have talked about them as being essentially certain that there's liquid water on some of these, at least.
The potential for liquid water. What we would know from the data as we've gotten it is you would know the volume, the overall size of the planet. You would know its period, so its orbital period, how long it takes to go around the star. And from those things, you can then determine the mass of the planet. So knowing its mass and knowing its size, you're going to be able to deduce what its probable composition is. And from that composition, if you have a rocky planet and it's in an area where the temperature is correct for liquid water, then there could be water. So that's what we're saying. The funny thing is that a lot of people said, you know, that little blue one looks really nice. there's two blue ones, and they look suspiciously like the Earth. But, I mean, that's an artist's rendition, so it's kind of a hopeful thing. But that leads us to our next – so just the science behind it.
This is just the first thing.
So, and that is very – to me, that's amazing. I'm always in awe of what we're able to do scientifically. I think that we are so spoiled with what we can do scientifically, we often forget to be in awe of it. I mean, the power of the human intellect is astonishing, and what it can accomplish is truly astonishing. We should be astonished all the time.
I should say also that when I said it was my remark about it being basic math was not to poo-poo it, but to set that actually further in relief, that we, sometimes people will, especially kids might hear this, teenagers, and think, wow, that's beyond me. I could never do that. And actually, just the math is probably something that you've already studied.
Absolutely, yeah. You could. That is basic math. It's something that in a physics course you would easily be able to calculate, accounting for, just excluding some variables. But yeah, you would be able to calculate these kinds of things in a high school course. Not the discoveries themselves, but using the data, you would be able to calculate the masses and such and composition. So yeah, in that way, it is imminently accessible to us because our minds are amazing things. But the other two things.
On to two.
The other more solid thing that this indicates is the first discovery, the first thing of excitement is guaranteed. This is an amazing thing that we can do this. Two is it's a real target for a location for us to go. The probability of it being an inhabitable exoplanet, so a place that we could actually go to, it's a viable target. So we have three targets within the system that probably could sustain life. So if we made it there, we could probably live there. And that's pretty exciting. So we're looking very intensely for exoplanets for lots of reasons, and one of which is looking for targets that we can travel to in the future. We're looking for them specifically now, and we can do it because our telescopic technology has gotten to the point that we can, without all the background noise, get these signals of transits of planets. Because before, it was just impossible to get that level of data out of a star because the intensity was too variable. But now the intensity is so stable that we can actually deduce these things, so we can find them. And this one's relatively close, so 39 or 40 light years away, meaning that if we did have speed of light travel, or even just 50% of the speed of light travel, within 20 to 40 years, we could arrive at the planets. So it is, you know, based on the technology, which is theoretically possible of near, proximal, or even greater than speed of light travel, we have a real location of a place that we could go and try to inhabit for some reason. So that's also very exciting. We have a place that we could go outside the planet. And we're growing in the idea that these are natural structures, that planets around stars can be presumed, that the cosmos organizes itself this way, that when there is large masses of energy, they collect around in these fashions, that stars with planets circling them is the norm, not the exception. So that's also interesting. Now, the third thing that makes is where most of the excitement is. Like, most people are excited about the third thing, which is the possibility of life. So I was at the gym, and one of the guys said, NASA's announcing something tomorrow. Do you know what it is? And I'm like, No, I don't know what it is, but it's not aliens. <He's> like, how do you know it's not aliens? Like, the release of information about having discovered aliens would happen in a completely different way, so, and probably be largely controlled. Like, if we discover aliens, that release of information will be controlled in a completely different way than this was. So It's not aliens, but it probably is an exoplanet. That was my guess. It was an exoplanet. Not seven. But the excitement is that the idea that we would discover life there that it looks like it's a viable candidate, it could sustain life, which is interesting for us in trying to go there. But also, it is one of the first real good examples we'll be able to analyze to test a hypothesis. Scientific hypothesis right now is that life is a natural property of matter, that life naturally arises from matter, that matter organizes itself in high-energy systems in a way that the minimum may include great complexity, like life. And so this would be a test of that, because this would be one of the times that we can look at a planet that should be hospitable to life, and if matter does produce life spontaneously, it could be there or should be there.
And life, this is anything from single-celled organisms all the way up to intelligent life.
Right. So we have no evidence of life off the planet. So without that evidence, we can only make a hypothesis. But the hypothesis, the kind of dominant hypothesis in science, is that life is a natural property of matter, that it arises spontaneously if the conditions are appropriate. And so there could be, or even should be, life on these planets if they have the right conditions. The idea that they would be intelligent aliens or anything like that is completely, we have no evidence for anything like that. But there could be life of any kind. Just finding any kind of life off the planet would be groundbreaking.
And really, really neat. Some people sometimes expect Catholics, Christians in general, to be somehow threatened by or afraid of this sort of discovery. I'm not exactly getting that from you right now, though.
No, it always does confuse me, because when people ask me, recently I was I proofed an article for a major publication on alien life, and I was asked several times what the theological problems were. Like, what are all the problems? Would it be an end to faith? And from the beginning, I would just have to say, we need to take several steps back. I don't know of any theological problems of there being extraterrestrial life. It is interesting, and would be new data that would be dealt with theologically, but it doesn't actually contest anything. In fact, in some ways, it's somewhat natural to revealed theology. I mean, the universe exists because the inner dynamism of the Holy Trinity spills over into creation. Like, the love of God cannot be contained, and God wills that there be a world that he can love even more deeply. The idea that life would be limited to this planet is foreign to Scripture. Scripture never says anything about that. Foreign to Revelation. So, we have constructed this idea, or some people have, but it's not necessary to our theology. In fact, it would make more sense with the inner dynamism of the Trinity, which is uncontainable, that there would be other things to love in the universe. I mean, that seems pretty natural.
There was speculation on this going back to, the time of the creation of what became known as the Ptolemaic model. The Almagest, I think, talks about this. This is part and parcel of what we do. So I also am always sort of surprised.
I think the other thing, the reason that there is, like, I'm hesitant. Like, people say, do you believe in aliens? Belief just isn't the right word. Do I think that it's probable that there are aliens? That's a completely different question. I think it's definitely possible that there's alien life. But the thing is, we just don't, in the absence of any evidence, I'm just waiting for evidence. I'd like to see evidence and know what we're actually dealing with. I think it's certainly theologically consistent to have alien life. I hope there's alien life, because that would make a much more interesting universe. I don't believe or disbelieve in aliens. I'm awaiting the facts. But the theological possibility of them isn't a problem. The hesitation comes because I also don't know. I'm not convinced that life is an intrinsic property of matter. So that's a different issue. So I'm not convinced of that fact.
But that's as a scientist you're speaking right now.
Right. As a scientist, I'm not convinced, because the fact of the matter is we haven't demonstrated that in any way. We've seen no evidence that is true. Our attempts, which are longstanding and many, have been have failed. We haven't had any successful attempts to reproduce the idea that life spontaneously organizes itself out of matter, even though we've been trying for a long time. Now, the problem with that is that it's like trying to keep... It's like trying to keep a ship dry in the middle of the ocean. I mean, the Earth is teeming with life. So to exclude living things so as to try to recreate them is incredibly difficult. So that's the problem that we face. So I'm not saying that life is not an intrinsic property of matter. I'm just saying that we don't have any evidence of it.
Jesuit Father Brian Reedy there speaking with me, Chris Altieri.
You're listening to Vatican Radio.